Hello, hello. Good morning, my friends, mein Fräulein und Gentlemen. Welcome to Sunday Morning Philosophy Chat. And, well, there's a bunch of stuff to talk about. I am working on a very interesting speaking debate opportunity, which I will announce as soon as it is complete and the negotiations are done. So, yeah, it's kind of funny, you know, slowly emerging back into the radius of civilized life after 5 or 6 years in the wilderness. And you will be the first to know. I will come to your house, knock on your door, and we shall hug as if we are trying to crush a ghost between us. So, yeah, I have a bunch of stuff to talk about. I guess the one that is somewhat important is, I don't know if you're in the crypto space, but of course I'm sure you've heard about the hack that happened a day or two ago. And you know, this is it's a very interesting, obviously very tragic, my gosh. I was reading a guy's post, he just lost $1.6 million worth of Bitcoin. Now, is this a problem with Bitcoin? It is not. Nothing happened that broke the cryptography or private hashes of Bitcoin, so it's nothing to do with that. But of course, it does alarm people. The guy who lost his, that would be about 18 Bitcoin, 18 or 19 Bitcoin, $1.6 million. I mean, a staggering sum. And of course, the brutal thing is that it's not like you can easily trace or really trace much at all. And so a very difficult situation. And my heart really goes out to the people who trust it, right? So it's a challenge, right? I mean, do you keep your coins on an exchange? Well, what if the exchange gets hacked? Do you keep them private and air-gapped computers, and where do you put the keys? And it's a challenge. Of course, we all know these stories. There was a guy who had a bunch of Bitcoin on a computer that got thrown out, and he was begging the local city for years to let him go and search the trash heap for his computer to see if he could recover them. There was a guy who had a USB stick with some Bitcoin on them, and he'd forgotten the password, and then he had to try and figure out what the password was, and I think he had 10 tries before it got wiped, and so on. So that is another big challenge when it comes to that kind of stuff. And we've all heard these tragic tales of people who lose and so on. And there's some not insignificant number, 5 or 10% of Bitcoin appear to have been lost. And what was it? I think it was Satoshi who said, well, you can take solace in the fact that if you've lost Bitcoin, you've raised the value of Bitcoin. But yeah, so that's a challenge. It is not specific to Bitcoin, right? The fact that if you have a value of any kind, if you have a value, people will want to take it is a sad fact. I'm not even going to say of human nature, because we've yet to see how human nature adapts to a relatively peaceful world. And by that, I mean, in particular, peaceful parenting. We don't know what human nature is in the face of peaceful parenting. Nobody knows. I mean, I suppose I have some example with my own daughter who was raised peacefully, but of course, you know, she still has to navigate her way in a world where, of course, people are not raised peacefully, and they are propagandized, and they are frightened and bullied and all kinds of terrible stuff. So, will there be rapacious thieves if they're raised in a peaceful and productive and healthy and moral manner? It seems, and the data points towards this very specifically, but it seems pretty unlikely that there will be rapacious predatory thieves in a world where children are raised peacefully. Now, why do people steal? It's a pretty big an important and foundational question. So why do people steal? I myself pilfered a few things from stores when I was in my early teens. Nothing major, you know, nothing important. But nonetheless, I pilfered a few things when I was, I don't know, 12 or maybe 13. And then I stopped. I got a real sense of this is a bad path to be going down. So pilfered a couple of things. And why? I mean, I've thought about this over the years, given my sort of later dedication to property rights, free market, and the value of mutual exchange. Why did I steal? Now, of course, talking about myself is not talking about all of humanity. I get that, but I think I have some pretty good and important information as to why. I obviously can't say all people, but I am a human being, therefore it covers more than me, why some people steal. Why do some people steal? Well, they steal for two reasons. One, they have been stolen from, and two, they have been unprotected. Why would we owe allegiance to a society that utterly failed to protect us? Because the first thing that society owes the young, the babies, the toddlers, the young, the teenagers, the very first thing that society owes the young is protection. And if you have a violent caregiver, such as I had, and I'm sure many of you had, for which I have great, great sympathies and hugs, if you have a violent protector and society doesn't do anything about it, then why would you give the tiniest little rats behind over the rules of society when society has zero interest in protecting you? I mean, let me give you an example. Hopefully this will be vivid enough that if you didn't go through this, you'll understand, intellectually, of course, we all get it, but you'll understand more viscerally what I'm talking about. If you hire a security guard at, you know, fairly significant expense, you hire a very skilled security guard, like top-notch. You hire a security guard to guard your factory at night. It's got copper wire, it's got valuables or whatever, so. And you say, listen, man, I'm going to pay you $10,000 a month to guard my factory at night. And I'll pay you every 2 weeks. And you also have security cameras in your factory at night. Day and night. They're on at night. They're infrared. You can see at night, all that, right? Now, this guy is supposed to be the best, so you don't really check up on him. But let's say that a bunch of stuff gets stolen from your factory. You're on vacation. You're offline. You come back. And you get a report that stuff's been stolen from your factory. And then you come back and you review your security tapes, which include the nighttime tapes. And what you see is that of the 14 days you were away, for the first 12 days, he sleeps every night. And not just like accidentally dozes off, like brings a little cot, a sleeping bag, one of those night generate stars on the ceiling, soothing music, lava lamps, Matthew McConaughey audiobooks played at 50% speed, you know, all that. And he sleeps. And then, on the last night, he steals. He thinks he's stealing from a place where the cameras can't reach, but he steals. He steals $100,000 worth of equipment. He doesn't realize there's a camera there recording him. Now, do you owe him his pay? Do you owe him $5,000? Because you hired him for a job. And you said you pay him $10,000 a month. First 2 weeks, he sleeps, and then he steals. Do you owe him $5,000? Do you have to pay his salary? I think, generally, people would say, well, no, because he didn't protect your factory, and then he stole from you. So if he were to take you to court and say, hey, man, you didn't pay my salary, man. I'm taking you to court. And you point out to the judge that not only did he sleep on the job, not by accident, but on purpose, but then stole from you, would the judge say, well, you must pay him his salary? I mean, I don't know what judges do in the current miasma, but in any rational legal system, you would not be obligated to pay for a guy who did not fulfill his obligations and then stole from you. Because you'd signed a contract saying you're going to guard my factory. The contract is not, I'm going to give you a quiet place to sleep with no noise or interruptions fantastic napping spot. The contract is you're going to walk around. David Thewlis was in an old movie many years ago where he shadowed a security guard who had to swipe his electronic card on readers around the factory on a regular basis to make sure he was doing his patrols. It was kind of a terrifying movie as a whole, but he was very good. So he did not fulfill his side of the contract. Do you owe him pay when he has not fulfilled his side of the contract? And again, not by accident. Came there with a cart, sleeping bag, lava lamps, quiet music, whatever. Well, no. And then he says, you stole from me. And I says, but you stole from me first. If you hadn't stolen from me, I wouldn't have, quote, stolen from you. If you had done your job and protected my factory and not stolen from me, I would have paid you your salary happily. So you, as the factory owner, you're getting stolen from first. And then you don't pay him what you, quote, owe him because he stole from you. He stole from you by defrauding you. He stole from you by physically stealing from the factory. Now, let's say that as a whole, he didn't steal from you, like he didn't take $100,000 worth of stuff. Let's say he didn't steal from you, but instead he just came in with his army cot and his sleeping bag and he slept all night, didn't protect your factory. Would you still pay him? I think in a just legal system, if you had proof that you hired him to protect your factory and he just slept all night, that you wouldn't have to pay him because he had not fulfilled his end of the contract, not by accident, but on purpose, with malice aforethought, or at least selfishness aforethought, or something like that. I mean, I remember when I wanted a computer, I was basically just, I just mulled it over with myself. I was like, gee, I wonder if I could just buy it from a thief. I wonder if I would, it'd be fine. I want a computer and all of that. So I was really fascinated by how this stuff all comes about. How does it come about that people just don't care about the property rights of others and destroy, I mean, to get a hold of their value, and it's tens of millions of dollars that were stolen, but to get a hold of this value, they sow a fair amount of fear and uncertainty and doubt into the Bitcoin space itself. So private pillaging, general loss as a whole. So it's important. I'll just pick up the theme that if you hire someone to protect your factory and he doesn't do the job, do you owe him the money? No. Now, he will say that you've stolen from him, but he didn't do his job. So people steal from society when society fails to protect them. This, if you're a donor, and freedomain.com/donate, if you subscribe on the various platforms, if you subscribe, I go into this in much more empirical and historical detail with regards to the French Revolution. And I think one of the differences, I know that there's some genetics involved, one of the differences between people on the left and people on the right, people on the left are greedy and amoral and driven by fairly animal impulses. And I think, I mean, I know that people on the left do not respect property rights, and people on the right generally do respect property rights. Now, I think, other than the genetic elements, which are not inconsiderable, but I do think that one of the differences between people on the left and people on the right is people on the left were not protected by society or family, and people on the right were protected much better, not perfectly, but much better, by society and family. So if you grew up Christian, your parents heavily invest in educating you, in teaching you morals, in teaching you a worldview. There's a community around. And of course, I know that abuse happens within Christian communities. I get all of that. But what I'm saying is that in general, if you grow up in a community of morally inclined, like-minded people, your chances of being truly abused and neglected are much lower. And neglect is the big thing. Neglect is the big thing. If you are harmed by a parent and neglected by society, you grow up with no respect for the rules of society. How could you have respect for the rules of a society when, if society is following those rules fail to protect you? And if society is not following its own rules, then why the ever-living heck should you follow society's rules at all? Right? This is a really, really important thing that happens right deep down in the spinal fluid of people who grew up in every society. So I just want to run it by you one more time because it's really only these two possibilities. If you're neglected by your parents, then your parents have no moral authority over you because whatever morals they have led them to neglect you. If your parents are violent or abusive towards you and society does nothing about it and your parents are praised and you are told you must be with your parents, honor their mother and their father, even though they're terrible, why would you have any respect for society's rules? It's a great line in not a great movie, No Country for Old Men, where the guy says, if the rules brought you to here, which is to your death, if the rules brought you to here, of what use were the rules? If every rule led you to here, this disaster, of what use were the rules? How do we get people to respect society's rules? Society has to protect children if it wishes to survive. See, when I talk about protecting children, when I talk about the voluntary family, which is the way to privatize the family and thus improve it, when I talk about these things, obviously it's to an individual level, and I do this in the call-in show, so I do this to an individual level, it's important, but at the most massive and general Western-laced social model of everything under the sun and moon, if society is not dedicated to protecting children, that society cannot survive. Unless society is willing, as in some third world countries, to escalate that brutality to truly stupendous levels of honor-killing violence, in which case it's more of a prison planet than it is a voluntary society. But any reasonably peaceful and voluntary free speech, property rights, limited government society cannot survive if it does not protect its children. Because when I grew up, society didn't protect me at all. In fact, when my mother called the cops on me when I finally began to fight back in my early teens, the cops gave me a big lecture on the need to listen to my mother. It's a generation gap, I understand. She seems different, but you gotta listen to your mother, son. Okay, copies. Sorry, I shouldn't laugh. It's so long ago now. It's coming on 50 years, half a century. Allow me to have some laughter about such a long ago tragedy, which did liberate me. It liberated me from having to give one tiny rat's behind about society's rules, because society and Christianity, which is how I grew up, society had at that point close to 2,000 years to develop its rules. 2,000 years, 2 millennia it had to develop its rules and get it right. And at the end of nearly 2,000 years of trying to get the rules right, when I was fighting back against the bully who had treated me violently and cruelly throughout my entire childhood, when I finally got big enough to fight back, my mother called the cops on me and I got the lecture. There were two cops in there. I got no follow-up. Nobody from Child Protective Services came to call. Nobody dropped by. Nothing. Nothing. Oh, I get it. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, those two probably long dead police officers. I guess they could still be alive. So, yeah, if they were 30, almost 50 years ago, they'd be 80. They could still be around. But they gave me a precious instruction. And listen, I'm sure that if you were in school and you were being bullied and you went to the teachers, the principal, whoever, the nurse, talked about the bullying, what was done? Probably not much. And I understood this, of course, when I only got bullied twice very briefly, but I understood that there's no point going to the guys who trapped me and my friend in the woods when I was 12, they just said, oh yeah, if you go to the cops, yeah, we might go to jail. We'll just get out and beat you to death or beat you within an inch of your life or something. It's some huge threat. Yeah, maybe you'll go to the cops. Maybe we'll go to jail. We'll just get out and then we'll just beat you up or kill you. All right. I understood that society was not going to help or protect me at all. In fact, society was going to side with the abusers and everyone, the hundreds and hundreds of people in the various apartment buildings we lived in through the paper-thin walls heard my brother and I being tormented and tortured and abused and attacked. Nobody did anything. So my point is not to rehash that, which I've done a number of times before, but simply to say why on earth would I have allegiance to society's rules when society only cared about my abusers and did not care about me at all? If you don't protect children, they will grow up with bottomless contempt for your society. So everyone who is in the presence of child abuse or hears about child abuse, you know, family, extended family, neighborhood, other apartment, on your floor, and this is why philosophy is so powerful, is that everyone who fails to intervene, and I'm not saying directly you go up and confront an abuser. I've done that a couple of times. It's pretty exciting. I'm not saying you have to do that, right? But do something. Do something. Especially if it's family, right? Sit everyone around the family table and say, here's what I saw, here's what I've heard, what's going on. Everybody who fails to do anything, to lift any finger to protect children, is absolutely raising an amoral, pit bull style, feral generation with zero allegiance to the rules. You know, like I'd tell you another example. I think this is kind of common. I had zero respect for homework. I had zero respect for property rights. I had zero respect for homework. Why? Why? I'm sure it's pretty common this way, right? I had zero respect for homework. Why? Because you got to do your homework because you have obligations. You got to do the right thing and we'll punish you if you don't. Like, okay, so y'all have rules about homework, but not about protecting me. Not about that at all. That's not important. It is really important that you learn how to do long division algebraically. That's really important. It is not important for society to lift a finger to protect you. In fact, your mother, after assaulting you for over a decade, will call the cops in the full certainty and knowledge that the cops will only lecture me and not ask her any questions. This goes back to the Menendez brothers. If you remember this from the late 80s, I think the trial went on 93 or something like that. These were two young men who, unalived their parents. And after the family had significant indications of horrific levels of abuse and no one did anything. Why should anyone follow social rules if those social rules only protect the bad guys and only punish the victims? So I, before I discovered philosophy, I had zero respect for society's rules. It was just a game of cat and mouse. It was like tag, you know, like you're running, you're dodging, you're jumping, you're trying not to get caught. So you bob and you weave and you misdirect and you grab a pole and you swing around it and then you run over the roundabout and you, right? It's just a game of cat and mouse. Maybe you get tagged, maybe you get away. It's like rabbit and fox stuff. There's no morality to it. You know, you try to get something and they try to catch you. You try not to do their homework. They try to catch you not doing the homework. You maybe apply for a 10-finger discount in a store. They try to catch you. See, it's a game of cat and mouse. It's not a game of morals because there's no morality in society. If society doesn't protect children, children have no respect for society. And then they say, well, sure, you know, I mean, these rich people who have all of this power, they have a lot more influence on society than I do. And they have produced a society that doesn't just not protect its children, but actively exploits them, sells them off on the auction block of international banksters to bribe citizens with, quote, free stuff made on the blood, spleen, liver, and brains and souls of the next generation. Children are an enslavable, mineable resource to pay boomers to disconnect from basic math and reality. You're stuck in terrible schools. You're bullied. There's no recourse. You're treated badly at home. If you are, nobody cares. Nobody does anything. And then you find out, wait, what? I'm born into $1 million of debt and nobody's talking about this. They want me to learn math and this is their math. You've got to be kidding me. As I mentioned before, in a history class, I was about 14 or so. And The history teacher was telling us about the pensions that we were going to get when we got old, and half the class just laughed at him. It would have been much better, of course, from a storytelling standpoint, if the math teacher had told us about the pensions we were going to collect. Now, I mean, I guess I'm going to be 60 next month. I suppose I'm within spitting distance of a pension, but it sure ain't worth what the boomers got, especially when you compare it to things like housing prices. You know, it'd be much better if computers went up in price and houses went down in price, because at least if houses go down in price, you don't end up with a catastrophically low birth rate. So why do people steal? Because they're stolen from and they're not protected. Their childhood peace of mind is stolen from. And they, as children, I'll tell you this too, ridiculously common. I think it's still common, maybe a little bit less common than when I was young. But when I was young, and you guys can, of course, chime in and let me know what you think, but when I was young, as a victim of rank, rampant, and violent child abuse, you, as the victim, were blamed. You, as the victim, were blamed. My mother would be in my room, smoking like a chimney, typing on her rat-a-tat-a Gatling gun electric typewriter all night. I'd get no sleep. My mother would have some sort of mental breakdown, nervous breakdown, psychotic episode, or whatever it was. And I wouldn't get any homework time, wouldn't get any sleep, chaos, anxiety, fear. And I still had to show up and be alert the next day. I was short of food, short of money. We kept getting eviction notices. You know, a little stressful, fair to say, right? A little stressful. Particularly in the couple of years when my brother was in England and I was left to deal with my mother going mad. And I was blamed. You are not prepared for the test. You are not doing your homework. Or, as I was constantly told, if effort matched ability, you'd be an A+. Why don't you try harder? Listen, you boomer douchebags. You try 1 week in my life as a child, you're going to play Superman off a cliff edge. So that's why people steal. They're stolen from, and they're not protected. And why on earth would you have any respect for the rules of society that doesn't even lift a single solitary finger to protect children? Thieves are born in the decaying furnace of indifference and exploitation. If you were not paid for work that you honestly and legitimately performed, would you feel particularly concerned if you took a stapler home? Steve Martin in The Jerk. I'm going to take this. I'm going to take that. Would you care? If you had a company laptop, let's say it was worth $1,000, and the company owed you $5,000, legitimately, like for real, and they didn't pay you, would you feel morally obligated to drive for an hour and return the laptop? No, I don't think so. Maybe you would. But morality, as I've always said, is a relationship. You should not ever have higher morals than the people you are engaged with. Treat people the best you can when you first meet them. After that, treat them as they treat you. If the company owes you $5,000 and they're not paying you, and then they say, you got to give us the laptop back, what would you say? I, you know what? I will drop the laptop off when you give me a certified check for $5,000. Sorry for the younger people among us. Certified means it's guaranteed. It's as good as cash. The money's already been deducted from the account. They can't kite your check. They can't bounce the check. Right? Now, this doesn't mean that stealing is not wrong. Stealing is wrong. You know, if people shoplift because their family and school and church has failed to protect them, their society has failed to protect them, that is an injustice because you are taking out your frustration, alienation, and lack of respect for laws, which was generated by some people, on other people who didn't generate that indifference. Right? It's like me saying, well, a company owes me $5,000. They didn't pay me. So I'm going to go and steal something from someone else. Like, that's not right. That's not right. So I'm not saying it's not wrong. I'm talking about the reason why it happens. Because philosophy is about prevention, not cure. So we want to prevent these things from happening. And the best way for society to gain legitimacy for its rules is to have those rules. I mean, it's so crazy, right? So crazy this needs to be said. But it does. It really does, because people aren't, they don't understand this. For them, I mean, you do, maybe, certainly, hopefully. Now I'm talking about it. If society wants people to grow up respecting the rules of society, those rules have to benefit those in society. If you want children to grow up with a great degree of faith and fidelity and belief in following rules, those rules have to benefit children. They have to be able to protect children, or at least willing to try. At least willing to try. I mean, what bothered me over the course of my childhood, I am scarcely alone in this, is nobody even tried. Nobody even tried. Not one person from my childhood, even though I've been public about it for over 20 years, not one person from my childhood or my youth has ever called me up and said, ah, you know, I feel kind of bad that we didn't do anything about it, or say anything, or even call you when we found out and say, I'm sorry about what happened to you. Nothing! Nothing! I met up once with a friend of mine from childhood, in my 30s, after I'd been public about this stuff. And his mother said to me, how is your poor mother? How is she doing? Is she okay? I can only laugh. I can only laugh. Even if people think that I'm, you know, I know some people think I'm a bad guy, right? I'm a bad guy. Do you know there was a woman recently, I think she killed 3 of her children and all of that sort of stuff. And in the comments are endless cascades of people saying, oh, that poor mother, postpartum depression is really tough. Ah, I see. So that's how it goes. A woman can murder her own helpless little babies and children and toddlers, annihilate her entire bloodline, and she gets sympathy. Aha. Okay. So that is interesting. I myself can have been vastly wronged by society and am working to protect the innocent, and I'm a bad guy. And when people participate in these complete moral reversals, they are driving a stake through the heart of their entire society, which maybe is a vampire that should be returned to the ash that composes it. Everyone participates in this. You, me, everyone participates in this. And it actually has been quite helpful for me and instructive for me in working, as I have for many decades, to help protect children, to see what happens to people who work to help to protect children. What happens? Evil, cult, blah, 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 right? And I get no excuses for being a legitimate victim of massive violence for 15 years. No excuse. A genuine victim. I've not been perfect in my life, obviously I get that. But, you know, as a kid, I was a genuine victim. And so people see this deep down in their hearts. And they say, well, if society doesn't care about us, then why should I care about society? It's perfectly a legitimate position. If society fails to protect you or me, why on earth should we sacrifice and restrain ourselves in order to protect society? Why should I pay a security guard who stole from me and defrauded me, slept on the job, and ripped me off? Well, but you had a contract. That's right, and the contract goes both ways. The contract goes both ways, and children are not responsible for upholding the social contract. The social contract is responsible for protecting children. And if society can't protect children, what frickin' use is it to anyone except abusers? Now, once you understand and you realize that is, the abusers who run society, then why on earth would you follow the rules of abusers? I view, not everyone, obviously, it's a lovely community here, I view society as being run by and enabling abusers. Because everyone's shocked at the Anthony Fauci stuff, right? And they think that the problem is with Anthony Fauci. No, Anthony Fauci is an inevitable shadow cast by the massive amounts of coercive and manipulative power centralized in the upper echelons of political oligarchies. You give that amount of power to anyone, it will either corrupt them or only the most corrupt will seek it out. And people think that the problem is Anthony Fauci. Like, oh my gosh, if only somebody different had been in that position. And I mean, obviously there's a difference between Biden and Trump, and I get all of that. So I'm not saying it's a zero, but the inevitable logic is that power in a ragged upward line, power and corruption are both going to increase. And there's dips and so on, right? But he's a symptom, not the cause. The cause is people who want something for nothing, which is stealing. The people who want, like the first people who got retirement benefits, they had barely or not even paid into the system, and they got a significant amount of money out of the system. That's stealing. People who are constantly saying the rich need to pay more. It's like, bro, the bottom 50% of society pays barely any tax and gets massive amounts of benefits. As you know, the biggest single spending item in most Western countries is coerced redistribution of wealth, taking and bribing. Why do people want something for nothing? Because they got nothing from society except their suffering being ignored and their abusers being protected and praised. And I, of course, studied and grew to hugely respect and treasure property rights in the abstract, which is a good thing to do. Property rights are very valuable, essential. But I have much more sympathy for those in my past who did not work to protect me or others as children, because when you actually work up and you effectively protect children, a society tries to destroy you. Ah, yes. But society's rules are just moral and good, essential, and must be respected. Well, if society doesn't respect children, don't expect children to grow up respecting society. Which is, all I got was indifference. Now, children are actively propagandized, and to a large degree, kind of poisoned as a whole. So that's much worse. I mean, kids now are going through much worse in school than what I went through. I was only bored. It was all just dull and indifferent and so on, right? The British North America Act did this and this and do. But now children are actually like mentally destroyed and terrorized and all of that. So the cold card, July 2026, was not, the devices weren't hacked. So for those of you who don't know, and please understand, I'm no big expert on this, right? So forgive me if I go astray, but I think the general pattern is clear. So with Bitcoin, you got hardware wallets. So your keys, the keys to your crypto, live in a sealed, air-gapped box, never touches the internet. And you get these phrases, these are sequence of phrases of words that are generated by incredible layers and depths of hardware randomness. And you can't guess them. So there's a company called CoinKite that manufactured a hardware wallet called Cold Card. And it said, oh, it's a fortress and so on, right? And what's wild is July 30th, a couple days ago, in a 25 to 41 minute window, an attacker grabbed hold of, I mean, reports vary, somewhere between 1,000 and 1,300 Bitcoin. Initially reported about 38 million, later it was upgraded to 70 million. And even higher in some analyses. And this is from over 1,000 single signature addresses. It never touched a single physical device. And I think AI was used to try and guess these phrases that unlock the Bitcoin. So, what happened? So, the problem wasn't sort of some sort of exotic cryptography or any kind of physical extraction. It was a firmware. So, firmware is the software that runs the hardware. It was a firmware build error. That's the stuff that's on your, it's in your coffee maker, your headphones. Sometimes you get firmware updates to your mouse or your keyboard or maybe your washing machine too or whatever, right? It's the code that runs right above the hardware. So a firmware build error dated back to March 2021, version 4.00, 4.01 onward. So the code was supposed to pull randomness from a chip hardware random number generator. So for I won't go into all the technicals of it, but on affected builds, the device fell back to a weak software path, seeded by non-secret chip data, serial number, timer registers, and so on. So it was supposed to be 128 bits of encryption, went down to something like 40 bits. Newer models, MK4, MK5Q, less catastrophic, still reduced. So seeds that should have been computationally unreachable became guessable offline. So an attacker who understood the flaw, and CoinKite, however much we may trust them or not trust them, has suggested AI review of the open source firmware likely helped to surface it, could generate candidate seeds, match them to dormant on-chain addresses, and script the drains. Many of the emptied wallets sat quiet for years, so there was no phishing with a PH, you know, like the when they ask you for your password and so on. No malware, no physical access, just the quiet and hard-to-detect failure of the randomness that was supposed to make ownership real. And even though, I suppose, the firmware was updated, it doesn't heal the seed that was already weakly generated. So, think of sort of every movie with a hacking scene. You know, there's some guy feverishly typing, there's a bunch of Matrix-style DOS characters racing across the screen, and it's like, I'm trying to get in. And usually there's a scene in these kinds of things where somebody has to guess the password. And if you have a truly random password, you know, 20 characters, upper and lowercase, special symbols, it's going to be pretty hard to guess that. However, if it's like, let's try his daughter's birthday. Let's try the make of his car. Let's try his wife's maiden name, like something, right? Something. Then you are reducing the variables. And if you have enough time, you're much more likely to get in. If it's a mnemonic that is guessable. So to put it mildly, if it's truly random words, like let's just say it's truly random words, it's going to be really hard to guess. If, however, you know for a fact that the quote random words are something that Hamlet says in the play Hamlet, well, then it's just a matter of time, right? So the randomness was reduced. And thus, it could be guessed. And the guy who lost his 1.6 million said it was air-gapped, which means it never went on the internet, which is a wild thing. Air-gapped computers, like you get them out of the box and you never connect them to the internet, right? You disable the Wi-Fi, you never plug in an Ethernet cable, they never touch the internet. So the internet doesn't even know they exist, so to speak. There's no updates, there's no online or anything like that, and so on. Chris Masterjohn on X has written this. I say this without obviously knowing whether it's true or not. I'm sure this stuff will come out in court. He wrote, the cold card security break was because the coder, working in Python, disabled the built-in random number generator, thinking it wasn't needed because they were redirecting to a different random number generator, not realizing that the device itself, written in C, which the coder apparently didn't understand, called in the disabled built-in random number generator. And evidently they innovated in their code purely to change it from the open source when a competitor came out using their open source. The level of total carelessness and total lack of due diligence driven by utter pettiness here is baffling. So for people, Jonathan Goodman, it's Coach Goodman on X, he said, $1.6 million in Bitcoin was drained from my account on July 29th in the cold card wallet hack. He says, my Bitcoin was in cold storage. My keys were on a cold card device kept in a safety deposit box that had never been connected to the internet. This part's nerdy, but here's what happened. Hackers discovered a vulnerability in the part of the hardware wallet code used to create seed phrases. So you can generate your own seed phrases. You can use the ones auto-generated by the wallet. And if the wallet has generated a sequence of words as your seed phrase that are not truly random, then they're, of course, much easier to guess. So he said, hackers discovered a vulnerability in the part of the hardware wallet code used to create seed phrases. This allowed them to use AI to brute force guess seed phrases. He said, I was at our cottage and heard about the hack today. No way this affects me, I thought. I logged into Wasabi, software that lets me view my Bitcoin wallets online. Right away, I saw lines of red transactions, withdrawals, and I knew. From 9:36 p.m. to 9:43 p.m. on July 29th, every wallet I had been emptied, he said. 18.25 and change Bitcoin gone. That's just over $1.6 million Canadian. Now, most people make about $1 million, so maybe it's a little bit more now. But so that's a lifetime and change of labor. Gone. Despawned. He says, perhaps the hardest part about this is that I did everything right. I never shared my seed phrase with anybody, he says. My devices never touched the internet. Everything was kept in multiple safes and a safety deposit box. None of it mattered. All because the hardware that created the seed phrase originally had one line in their code from 2021 that had a vulnerability. He said, I'm filing a police report and a report with the Ontario Securities Commission, but I don't expect to recoup anything. A part of me is trying to make sense of what just happened, he said, or try to figure out a lesson in it. I'm struggling. $1.6 million is a staggering amount of money to have stolen. And he said, I guess that all I can think about right now is that I'm so damn happy that I'm an entrepreneur and that my earning potential is under my control. Mark my damn words, I'll recover. So I'll tell you, we can close off with a couple of things. I really appreciate you guys dropping by today. I hope this is of value to you. But let's just close off with a couple of general principles that I have learned over the years. And this is maybe mean. This is maybe somewhat contemptuous. But I live by it. I live by it. Most people are at best barely competent, and most people are absolutely amoral. I've been working in the sphere of virtue for 45 years, almost. I can't wait till I'm 65, could round it off to a good old tasty half century. So I've been working, and I've done it in the art world. Worked with morals and ethics and virtue and integrity. I've done it in the business world. I've done it in the academic world. I've done it in the realm of pure philosophy. I have done it in the dating world. I have had a wide range of experience. And in the business world, I've done it all the way from being a dishwasher and an office cleaner as a teenager to chief technical officer, reporting to the board, involved in two high-level business sales. Like, I've run the gamut. I've seen it all. I'm sorry, I'm just remembering when I was in the play The Seagull in theater school. We had some experts come in to talk to us about Russia and Russian history and so on to make it more vivid and real for us, the Anton Chekhov play. And Anton Chekhov was a doctor, also a playwright, of course. The Wood Demon, I think, the Cherry Orchard is this famous play about the decay of a society that failed to protect its children and therefore ended up with the Russian Revolution. And again, it's not straight causal. There was a bunch of other involvements, of course, right? But these revolutions don't come out of nowhere. And I remember, this is like from many, many decades ago, I just remember our professor who came in to talk to us as actress about Russia in the 19th century. He said, you have to remember that as a doctor, Anton Chekhov saw everything. He saw the whole. And I said, well, yeah, because he delivered babies. Let me resurrect that joke from oh so many moons ago. I thought it was quite witty, and I did stand up once, but it was not for me. So this is a lot of hard-won experience. Most people are barely competent. Most people feel like frauds, and in many cases they are. Most people are barely competent. Most people don't think for themselves. I mean, other than Eastern Europe, most of the white Western world went hog wild into COVID hysteria and the mystery shots. Because at the time, it was a mystery as to the long-term effects, because they only tested them for a couple of months, which they were very upfront about and then wanted to hide the data. So most people, barely competent. Most people do not think for themselves. They pretend to. Of course, everybody has to put on that simulation. I remember when the Schengen Agreement was being proposed, my mother was very keen on having no borders in Europe. I'm not going to claim that I had any particular opinion about it, other than I had no respect for my mother's opinions about anything. But I remember my mother would say over and over again, every different, but you see, if you are, she would say, if you're a waitress in Scotland, then you can go down to the Mediterranean and work in the winter when the restaurants are more closed in Scotland. So think of all of the value of that. And she just repeated this over and over again. I never found out where she got it from, but I doubt she came up with it herself. It was just some piece of propaganda. The most secure election in American history, safe and effective. Diversity is a blah, blah, blah. Right, so most people, they're not thinking for themselves. They're just repeating slogans. They are simulating thinking. AI is better at, quote, thinking than most people are. Even Gemini. So I did this post on X. Just out of curiosity, I asked Gemini whether Fauci ever expressed doubt in his, quote, diaries, right, his bureaucratic journals for his future book. I asked Gemini, it's a Google product, right? I asked Gemini, hey, did Dr. Fauci ever express doubts or hesitations about the fact that the COVID vaccine was supposed to prevent infection and transmission? And of course, Gemini said, nope. He never expressed any doubt. It's nothing about that at all in these diaries. And then I tried prompting it. I said, well, but what about the time he went to a party? He was vaccinated. There was proof of vaccination was required to get into the party. And he was still worried about getting COVID, even though everyone was vaccinated. And Gemini said, nope, never happened. Doesn't exist. I go over to Grok and it's like, oh, yep, here's the reference. Here's, you know, he did say all of that. He's up at night worrying about getting infected with COVID, even though he's been vaccinated and he was at a social gathering where everyone else is vaccinated. So by logical extension, and it's not even that much of a logical extension, that's clear that Dr. Fauci doubted significantly that the vaccines prevented transmission or infection. Otherwise, why would he worry about getting COVID when he's vaccinated and everyone at the party is vaccinated? They all have to show proof to get in. I mean, it's foul. It's absolutely foul. Like, I understand Gemini, what does it get us? It gets its useless crap from the mainstream media. Well, they're not writing about it, of course, right? Slaves to pharmacy. And they're getting it from Reddit. I mean, that's not going to give you anything. At least Grok gets it from a relatively uncensored platform such as Twitter. X. Sorry, X. Get the right platform name. So Twitter is the X name of X. So it's Twitter's X. No, it's X's Twitter. No, something like that. I think you understand what I'm saying. I hope you do, because I don't. So it's foul because what it does is it creates two universes, right? It creates, no, same screen, different movie. But it's even worse than that, because it's not even the same screen. By not reporting on facts, AI creates a relationship-destroying, society-destroying bubble of people who don't have the faintest freaking clue what is going on in the world because the AI is hiding it all from them. So people asking Gemini questions about Fauci and his diaries. I mean, I'm not even going to say that the AI is lying, but unless there's an additional layer of making it lie, like don't ever admit this, don't ever admit that, in which case the programmers are lying, and those lies are creating bubbles that are extremely dangerous in the world. Because if you're dealing with people who have totally opposing facts or don't have access to the right information, you can't even communicate with them. This is the find people hoax and so on, right? The IQ questions that we've talked about. If people just don't have access to the information, you can't even have a conversation with them because they're speaking another language, and a language called unreality. It's horrendous. Drives families apart, drives nations apart, creates massive conflict. And people say, well, I trust Gemini. You brought this thing up in Grok, but Grok just scans Twitter and there's all these conspiracy theories, blah, 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 blah. And then you say, look, here's the actual text in the diary. And they won't acknowledge it. What was it? Trump's press secretary once just played the entire speech that Trump gave at Charlottesville. The fine people hoax, right? This idea that he called neo-Nazis fine people, like, just not true, not even remotely true. But it doesn't matter what you say. People are willing to misinterpret and lie. And there's most ideologies in the world absolutely comfortable, in fact, encourage their members to lie to you. Right? Communists, absolutely willing to lie, everything for the sake of the revolution. It's an amoral grab of power. Most people are addicted to ideologies, and ideologies being an addiction, lying to support an addiction is one of the reasons that it is an addiction. It's a dysfunction. You've heard of the people, I'm sure you've heard of the people who fake chronic pain to try and get opiates from a hospital. Oh, I'm in such pain. My stomach is killing me. Help me out, doc. Help me out. Right? They lie. They're not in pain. At least not physical. It's just it gets physical, the pain of addiction. But then honest about it. Lie, cheat, steal. It's an addiction. So people who want power are power junkies, power addicts. They'll lie, cheat, and steal. Lots of religions out there in the world and all ideologies will lie, cheat, and steal. And most people are either superstitious, religious, or ideological, which means they lie. And they don't care that they lie. Because all of their relationships are based on lying. And because all their relationships are based on lying, if they tell the truth, they are isolated. And once you become addicted to relationships based on lies, you can't stand to be alone. You can't stand to be alone. I don't know if you've known those people, just the compulsive, they have to be with people, they can't be alone. Freddie Mercury was one of them. Oh, I can't stand being alone. I can't stand it. I have to be with people, I have to do things. Well, I guess if you're addicted to scatological sex dungeons, you probably don't have a great relationship with your own conscience. Not super great, I assume. Most people are amoral. Most people are pathological liars. That is certainly true. Most people are pathological liars in that they wish to studiously avoid the truth. There should, of course, by any rational standard, be a huge reckoning about COVID. And the shots and the restrictions and all of this. It was all based on lies. And not even like mistaken lies and misread the data, not honest falsehoods, which can happen, right? But conscious, aware lies. Most of it based on lies and the suppression of truth. So there should be a huge reckoning. People's lives were destroyed emotionally, physically. People died, ended themselves. People's businesses were destroyed, their savings were drained, families were turned against each other, people's rights were stripped away. In Canada, protesters exercising the remnants of free speech were targeted in ways that, if I remember rightly, the Constitutional Court found to be unconstitutional. Doesn't matter. Of course, right? There should be a reckoning. All the people who told their children, well, you know, if you did something wrong, just say you're sorry. Just say you're sorry, give a hug, you know, talk it out. They said that to their kids, right? And all those people who turned on their fellow citizens because the squawk box told them the air was deadly, they owe an apology, right? People should say, you know, gosh, we really did go for that. You tried to warn us. Like, if everyone's wrong, nobody's wrong. I get that. But if some people are wrong and other people are telling them the truth, then the people who are wrong have a responsibility. I cared more about the LED boomer box ordering me what to do than my own flesh and blood raising legitimate concerns and questions about the virtues and values of what was going down. All these people watch all these movies about heroes, and they think, well, I would have protected Anne Frank. I would have stood up against the bad guys. I would have been Iron Man. I would have been Superman. I would have been Batman, Spider-Man. Spider-Man? That's that joke from Friends. It's Spider-Man, not Spider-Man. So everyone thinks they're a hero. Just about everyone folded without even a whimper. Again, Eastern Europe excluded, but of course, Eastern Europe had living memory taste of totalitarianism, whereas we've gotten a little softer in the West because it's been a while since the state has turned truly predatory. So, oh, how soon we forget. The totalitarian song, "Don't You Forget About Me." Ah, but we do. So most people They don't even know what the truth is. They just say whatever they can to get through any discomfort in the moment, to gain any little shred of status in the moment. They just lie. And they're so habituated to lying that they don't even think of it as lying anymore. My mother with her, but the Scottish waiters can go and waiter in the Mediterranean in the winter, and it's so convenient, and it's helpful, and blah, 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 blah. I mean, if you were to say to her, okay, hang on. I mean, people in England can't understand Scottish people. How well do you think Greeks are going to follow what they have to say? She would just get angry. Oh, you know, it doesn't matter. They can figure it out, right? Just get angry. I mean, language barriers are not insignificant, right? It's not like I'm going to go and join a Japanese boy band. And the only thing that prevents that, of course, is the language barrier. Everything else is perfect. So she just read something and picked something up, heard something, and then repeats it. And look, I'm not saying everyone's like my mom, but it's very common. People make all these claims. You try and drill down on the claims. Trump's a racist, right? You try and drill down on the claims. They don't know what they're talking about. They don't have any idea. They're just faking. They're just miming. They're ventriloquists with the digital media mainstream up their nether regions, making their teeth separators go up and down, and program sounds come out of their mouths. Most people. You can accept it or not. Maybe it's different in your environment. Maybe. But most people are addicts to delusions and approval and status. And all they do is map approvals and status by denying delusions. It is not what is true. It is what is praised. It is not what is real. It is what is approved. It is not what is factual or moral. It is what makes them feel better in the moment. What makes them feel better in the moment. That's all that matters. If somebody says, Trump is a racist, if you nod and smile, then they approve of you. If you have questions, they get tense and aggressive. And the last thing I'll say, most people, most social, in fact, I would say virtually all, I'd go even further, virtually all social groups are run by the craziest person. Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Almost all social groups are run by the craziest person. Because the craziest person will impose their will with great aggression and vitriol, whereas the most reasonable people won't. So in any conflict between the reasonable people and the crazy person, it's usually one, could be more, any conflict between the reasonable people and the crazy person, everybody sides with the crazy person because the crazy person will be willing to inflict reputational or social damage or even go further, whereas the reasonable people are detected, beep, 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 they are detected as a non-threat. Reasonable people can be reasoned with and tend not to escalate blowback if crossed or wronged. Crazy people will escalate blowback and attacks if crossed or wronged. And so everyone conforms to the crazy person out of fear of what the crazy person might do if they try to correct the crazy person or criticize them or ostracize them and blow up and attack and spread rumors and lies, maybe try to get them fired, like whatever. And so if you're in any social group, and there's a crazy person around, and you're a reasonable person, you will lose. 100% every time. Every time. It's an unbroken social experiment. The social group will conform to the crazy person and will reject the reasonable person. Because the crazy person does damage and alarms them, and the reasonable people don't. So they reward crazy and they punish reason. They reward aggressive, semi-psycho volatility, and they punish calm, reasonable negotiation. So, as the world as a whole gets crazier and crazier, one of the main reasons is that social groups conform to the crazy people and reward them with allegiance and punish the reasonable people with ostracism. Nobody wants to take on the crazy person, but you don't really have to take on the reasonable people because they're reasonable, so they're not going to blow up and try and get you fired or attack you or spread rumors or try and split up your marriage or whatever. So, these are the principles. People lie. People are amoral at best. And all social groups are run by the craziest person. All of them. All of them. Now, social groups, you know, pre-existing, it'd be families or I don't know, sports groups or chess clubs or whatever it is, right? If you have your own social group that's based upon rationality, the odds improve. The odds improve. But never to 100%. I mean, never to 100%. I mean, that's not a reasonable standard. I'm not 100% reasonable, blah, blah, blah. I just did a whole podcast yesterday on this. It's going out to donors, but those are the facts on the ground. And if you don't navigate your life by those facts, you will Kareem pinball style from one mess to another. And most people, even rational people, sensible people, philosophical people, most people will go nuts once in a while. It's like holding this giant balloon underwater. Like, you're tired, man. It pops up. Oh, get it back down, right? Most people are wrestling with crazy and it erupts on a semi-regular basis. It could be once a year, twice a year, maybe more or less, but and you just kind of have to roll with it. People just go crazy. They lose their virtues, lose their reason, lose their values. It's historical scars, it's inattention, it's laziness. I don't know. It doesn't really matter. But this is how you have to negotiate and navigate your life, in my opinion and experience. So freedomain.com/donate. If you could help out, listen, I got to tell you, summers are tough, man. Summers are tough for income. I promise you, I'm working on some really great stuff. It's really going to be positive and helpful and all kinds of great stuff. If you could help out the show, freedomain.com/donate, I would really, really appreciate it. Also do want to thank Elon Musk and team for giving me this platform again. It's a great pleasure to be able to chat with you guys about all of this sort of stuff. And I hope you have a wonderful day. Lots of love from me to you. Big spiritual hugs across the multiverse in our relentless and hiccuping pursuit of virtue, truth, and goodness. I appreciate your companionship more than I can probably ever express. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Take care. We'll talk soon. Bye.